washable keys, tackle box in my hand. Gonna cast a few lines with my toes in the sand. Pulling in a big catch makes me feel like a man. But the wife, she just don't understand. I love walleye, perch, trout, and bass. And if you don't like fishing, you can kiss my four-stroke right in the back. Cause the fishes all tremble at the thought of me when I'm fishing Paul Bunyan country.
Got a big show today. We've been talking a lot about the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic, the 20th anniversary celebration coming up on Saturday. So today we will go back 20 years and reminisce on how this whole thing got started. Bob Fitzgerald of Krause Anderson was in the middle of it all, and he tells us the story next. Plus another great story. If you haven't checked out the pictures on Paul Bunyan Country Facebook page yet, Steve Sapaniak of Predator Guide Service and one of his clients got a 55-inch muskie off Mille Lacs earlier this week. He's got all the details. And, of course, it's Lake of the Week Day. Mark Bacigalupi of the Brainerd Area Fisheries Office has the details on that. It's all coming up today. Welcome to Fish and Paul Bunyan Country. We continue our week-long look at some of the things going on with the 20th anniversary of the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic. Of course, no Walleye Classic last year, so they pushed the 20th anniversary back a year. We got a big celebration, 20 extra teams, $20,000 prize, but it all started 20 years ago, and it was the Krause Anderson Walleye Classic then, and the guy who was in the middle of it was Bob Fitzgerald at Krause Anderson, and he joins us today. Bob, thanks for joining us and taking some time. We appreciate it.
Hey, Kev. Yeah, my pleasure to be here today and talk about the Walleye Classic, just a great community event. And as we were reminiscing a little bit off air, couldn't be prouder of where that thing's at today.
It has certainly become a staple of the Bemidji summer. It is a big event. It brings people from a lot of different areas in to fish the tournament, and it's become a very important part. And it started, I guess, as an idea at a table in the Krause Anderson offices somewhere, right?
Yeah, actually, it was in a vehicle as we were driving down the road, you know, 20, 21 years ago. Head of our office at that time, Clint Brusley, and I were returning from Duluth and meetings over there, and we started talking about what could we do in Bemidji to have kind of a community event, you know, that would showcase the community, showcase the resources that we have in the community, and just a really good way for Krause Anderson to give something back to the community. Is that's very important to us. It's within our core values as a company to, you know, not only build excellent projects but to build stronger communities. As a matter of fact, it's in our core purpose is to build enduring relationships and stronger communities.
So you started talking about that. You wanted to come up with an idea. And how did the fishing tournament form? It was something that I had noticed we didn't have in Bemidji, and you guys took care of that.
Well, you just nailed it on the head, Kev. That's exactly what it was. It was something that wasn't in the community at the time, something that we felt would be different, something that could add to the community and again, showcase Bemidji, showcase the resource that we have in Lake Bemidji as well as Lake Irving, and again, give back. There was golf tournaments everywhere. There was other types of events, but we thought this would be something different, something that really fit a need and a desire. As we talked about it more and more, we found out that there was a lot of enthusiasm behind it, not only from the anglers, but from the community as a whole and the region, quite frankly.
How does something go from just an idea into a full-fledged tournament? There's so many moving parts. How do you make that happen?
Well, first thing we did is we put together a group of people that had been involved in events before, meaning, quite frankly, fishing tournaments. We spoke with Gary Barnard at the DNR, you know, so we had all of our I's dotted and T's crossed on that end, because that's something we wanted to make sure of, that we weren't adversely impacting the resource and that we were working well with them. Then we got people on board, you know, that had experience in events, you know, most notably Jim Hernesman from Corner Sports, Rays Marine now, and Tracy Pogue. Also picked the brain of Chip Lear on this one, who had run many, many events. And then we were very, very fortuitous in the fact that Cabela's was a longtime client of Krause Anderson's. And, of course, they had a tournament bus and trailer and had run tournaments before. So we leveraged that relationship and got them to come to Bemidji. Not so coincidentally, one of the reasons they agreed to come here is because Steve and Jalen, who were the two people, the husband and wife team that ran the tournament bus and trailer, their daughter was going to school here at the time. So it gave them the incentive to come to Bemidji, visit their daughter, and really put on a good show. And the ability to have Cabela's and their tournament equipment gave us instant validity as well.
Yeah, you. I mean, it was a big deal from the first tournament on. It was not like you had 30 boats that first tournament. You found a way to make it happen big right away.
Yeah, no question about that. Not only did we hit our 100 boats, but we had a waiting list from day one. And that waiting list just continued to grow, so we had to manage that and figure out, okay, you know, we wanted to give people who had taken a chance on us, really, and rolled the dice to get into the tournament that first year. We wanted to give them the opportunity to continue to return year after year. So we did set up kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a preference order for returning teams. So that was fantastic. That worked out really well also. And we had some of the bigger names from around the area in there, you know. Harv Leek was involved right away, the Lupke brothers, the Petersons, you know, right out of the chute. You know, just Steve Hawley, Larry Rundquist, you know, guys that just were well-known names in the region for fishing and were good sticks. You know, we had some of the best right out of the chute.
And from that point on, it just kind of built every year. I know you talked about giving back. How did you go about the process of setting up your beneficiaries?
Well, first and foremost, we looked at where was the needs. You know, who had some of the greatest needs? And everybody needs, right? But secondly, we put together who had horsepower. Because you don't put on an event like this without a lot of volunteers. So we, from day one, we made it almost a requisite that if you were going to benefit from the event, you had to participate in the event, meaning volunteer for the event, be it your organizers of your event, the participants of your event. So we had a lot of people from Special Olympics, the scouts, you know, fishing has no boundaries, youth hockey, you know, it was just over and over, people just came out and supported the event because, you know, to put on something like that, even though it's really a one-day event, it's not. It's a year-long thing, and, you know, it culminates with the actual event itself. So we'd have, you know, a couple hundred volunteers working out in the public eye as well as behind the scenes.
Okay. And when you put it together, and the way you put it together, obviously you wanted it to have some staying power, but here we are 20 years later.
Yeah, no question. You know, the folks I mentioned from Cabela's, they said typically these grassroots community-based events have a lifespan of, you know, maybe 5 to 6 years, and now it's the 20th event coming up. So pretty proud of that fact and pretty proud of the community of Bemidji and how they've supported it. You know, it still brings, as we talk about this, I still envision, you know, Joe Vinny singing the national anthem and the scouts, you know, presenting the colors and at attention in their uniforms, all the boat motors cut, you know, the sunrise coming over the east side of Lake Bemidji, and it just gives you goosebumps to be part of that, you know, a very small part of that. It makes you feel very, very special for the people involved and the event itself, and I couldn't be prouder to play a small role in that, as well as couldn't be prouder of our community, you know. The community just rolls out the red carpet as well from, you know, the restaurants, the bait shops, the people coming down to support it, you name it.
Well, Cabela's told you 5 or 6 years, and then all of a sudden at 15 years, this thing was as big and bigger than ever. And it got to a point where for Krause Anderson in the middle of construction season, it was taking a little bit too much time.
Yeah, you're spot on. That's exactly what it was, Kev. It wasn't that we didn't want to do the event anymore, but we just felt, you know, hey, we're a construction company. We're not event planners, even though we did it quite well. Even when Cabela's decided that they didn't want to do the regional tournaments anymore and just went to more the national stage, you know, we found a way to buy our own trailer and equipment to make this thing run efficiently. And it really got to a stage where it was becoming really consuming. And we just decided it was time, you know. It was like you conceive a child, you raise a child, and now it was for someone else to take over and really take that to the next level, you know, and grow that. And the Knights of Columbus have just been fantastic from day one, you know, because they weren't the only ones interested. We had several organizations interested in the event and taking over the event. But as I mentioned, you know, the Knights just, they really fit our core values on what we wanted for the event as far as not only a premier showcase of the Bemidji community and the resources that we have, but really committed to giving back to the community.
And that's exactly what they've been doing, and certainly they've done a great job. One of the things they have going for them, they got a lot of manpower. There's a lot of Knights of Columbus in town.
That was one of the other things, too, that we looked at when we were deciding who to hand this off to and transition it to, is do they have the capability and the horsepower to get this thing done without taking a step back? And they certainly did have that and do have that. And not only did they not take a step back, they've improved it every year, which was always our goal as well. And it's just a fantastic event.
So as you were putting it together and through the first few years, were there any roadblocks or did this thing go fairly smoothly?
You know, it went relatively smoothly. The only roadblocks we really had were, and I wouldn't even call them roadblocks, they were, you know, they're bumps in the road, was just us not having ever run an event like that before. You know, so it was a lot of baptism by fire and learning on the run. But again, you know, what we did is we tapped into people that we knew who hadn't been involved in events before, participated in tournaments before, and really picked their brain. You know, what did you like about event ABC, and what didn't you like? It's just as importantly, what didn't you like? So we put it all together in that manner, and, you know, a little bit of people allowing us to use formats, you know, that they had used that worked well. And again, just the support of the industry, you know, the fishing industry from Northland Tackle and others. The Petersons were great in on advice and then participating in the event too.
There's two ways to do events. You can be in charge of everything and it can be all yours, or you can let smart people who know what they're doing do it and then they can be good.
Well, that definitely fits the spot here because I'm at best a novice angler. I like to get out and fish, but by no means never have participated in a fishing tournament. But we surrounded ourselves with just a fantastic committee. And, you know, behind the scenes, we had some people internally here that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, like Chelsea Oldham and Fred Graves, who just were really the glue that kept it all together for us. You know, like you said, in the height of a construction season and then still pulling off a fantastic event.
Well, and it continues to be, and I think the thing that I find very interesting is, you know, a lot of those tandems that were there for year one will be fishing again in year 20 and have been fishing, you know, other than maybe when a wedding pops up or something, you know, 19 right. out of the 20 events.
Isn't that cool?
It is. It's really cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, it makes me, I'm smiling. We're not in the same room. We're doing this via telephone, but I'm grinning right now. And it's really neat, you know, and the relationships that were developed, you know, is fantastic. You know, every year you'd come back at the rules dinner, rules meeting, and just visit with the guys and gals, you know, the anglers, and have developed a lot of friendships throughout the years of people I still run into and see. And, you know, remember when, you know, and we talk about things like that. I was just talking to a guy, as a matter of fact, yesterday on my trip over to Fargo and back, and he hasn't participated in a few years, but we were chatting, and he just was reminiscing, you know, like we are a little bit right now, and still has a really good memories in his head of the Walleye Classic, and in particular the community of Bemidji.
So what was your role at Krause Anderson when the event began?
At the time, I was the director of marketing and business development. And that's really what spurred it, is, again, we were looking for something to really showcase the community and give back to the community. And, you know, two of the first calls I made were to buddies of mine, and that was Tracy Pogue, who now is in that role for Krause Anderson. he's our director of marketing and business development as I moved into a new role. And then I called Jimmer Hernesman, and I just said, guys, we want to do this, but we can't do it without people like you that have participated in similar events. And also just, you know, real pillars in the industry.
Oh, absolutely. And so what is your role these days at Kraus Anderson?
Well, a few years back, they decided to put me into more of an operations role and a leadership role. So now I'm vice president, director of operations, leading our Bemidji team here in this area.
How many people do you have in the Bemidji squad?
Well, you know, it varies depending upon how much we've got going out in the field at the time. But we'll typically run between, you know, 55 to 75 people, including, you know, our carpenters, laborers, et cetera, out in the field, and then our office staff. At our peak, we've had 83 people out of this office spread throughout the state, as well as we do work in, you know, neighboring states like North and South Dakota and Wisconsin from time to time as well.
Yeah, Kraus Anderson is... Go ahead.
Yeah, just our Bemidji office.
Okay.
Where we work nationally as a company.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Kraus Anderson is a national company, but yet really seems to have a very firm tie to the communities they are in.
Very much so, very much so. We're still family-owned by the Engelsma family, which they purchased, the father, Lloyd, who's no longer with us, purchased the company in 1937 at the, you know, kind of the height of the Depression, and now his family has grown it into a multi-billion dollar a year company that works nationwide.
Wow.
It comes down to our core purpose, though, Kev, of, you know, again, building enduring relationships, very relationship-driven company, and stronger communities. Very much community stewards. That's what really attracted them to me when I joined the company 21 years ago, was that I've always been involved in volunteer activities and involved in my communities that I lived and worked in, and they fit that mold as well, just good corporate citizens.
And when it comes to this tournament, even though you guys are not running it anymore, you have maintained a sponsorship with of the tournament too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We continue to give back and support the activities in this community and communities throughout, wherever we're working, wherever our clients are based. Again, very relationship driven. We really look at, when we're giving back, is it a corporate initiative? Is it championed by somebody within our team, or is it championed by, say, an industry partner or a client?
What are some of the projects going on in the Bemidji area that Kraus Anderson is involved in right now?
Well, right now, you know, the biggest ones in the Bemidji area are, you know, Stanford Health. They're one of our top clients. We're continuing to work on the interior there. As a matter of fact, there was a little piece that came out that Susan Jarvis, the CEO, was talking about. Oh, they have big plans into the future, continuing to do a lot of things internally in the interior of the building. Just wrapped up a new supportive housing project in Bemidji for the Headwaters Regional Development Commission. Just started working on a new halfway house over in Cass Lake for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and we'll be doing more work, like at Bemidji Steel is building a new facility. We're going to be working with them, working with Riverwood Bank, doing a third phase of supportive housing. It's called East Conifer Estates, right next adjacent to the phase we just completed. Two of the bigger projects that we have going on right now is Roseville Public Schools is doing a significant expansion and renovation, as well as what I'm calling kind of a two-thirds version of the Sanford Center. We're doing the Miners Event Convention Center for the City of Virginia, which will open later this fall.
Okay. Well, see, we learned the history of the Kraus Anderson Walleye Classic / Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic, and we get the scoop on all the building projects in the Bemidji area, too.
There you go. There you go. It's, you know, just for a personal note, just very proud of not only the event and what we did there, but to be part of a company that understands the importance of giving back to the communities in which we work, live, and play.
Well, Bob Fitzgerald has indeed been involved not just in this charitable event. I've seen him in any number of give back roles, from coaches to coaching to whatever. We're glad he had time to spend time with us and reminisce about the 20th anniversary of what is now the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic. Bob Fitzgerald from Kraus Anderson, thank you for taking time today. Really do appreciate it.
My pleasure, Kev. And about relationships, we go back a few years as well, eh?
All the way back to when you were going, I was watching you go 31-0 with that 84 Beaver team.
A lot of fun.
It's been a long time, yeah. I had hair, and yours wasn't gray.
There you go. I love that. Well, you take care, my friend. Always a pleasure to catch up and chat with you, and thanks for everything that you do for our community in particular, you know. Fishing Paul Bunyan Country, what a great show. I listen to it very often and try to pick up some tips so I'm no longer a novice.
I'm going to save this recording for negotiation day.
There you go.
Really great to hear from Bob Fitzgerald today. Of course, it's all going to happen Saturday. We've got the rules meeting tomorrow afternoon at the Eagles. The fishing will begin at 7 a.m. Saturday morning, and of course the awards ceremony at 4:30. I'll be out there on the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic Facebook page doing some live updates throughout the day, and of course awarding the prizes at the end of the day. It's going to be a great day at the waterfront Saturday, the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic 20th anniversary celebration. I don't know if you saw the post on the Paul Bunyan Country Facebook page. Steve Sapaniak of Predator Guide Service was out fishing muskies on Mille Lacs earlier this week, and he and his client brought in a 55-inch monster. He'll tell the story and much more next. This is Fish in Paul Bunyan Country. This is Fish in Paul Bunyan Country. Well, we're checking in with Steve Sapaniak of Predator Guide Service about 1 week into the muskie season now, and Steve's got a great story for us. We're going to get to that in a second, but first up, Steve, you made some predictions on where you thought the muskies might be with that heat for the opener. Did your predictions prove to be true?
Pretty much, Kevin. They moved to the secondary structure. They got out of the real shallows, 1.5 feet to 4 or 5 feet of water. And they moved to secondary structure, found a lot of muskies hanging in the 7 to 12-foot range. We should have had one opening day. One of my clients had about a 53-incher and hailed his lure. Unfortunately, he set the hook to the side, and I've had him and his brother, Adam and Matthew, for many, many, many years. But, you know, they know to set up, but unfortunately, you know, the excitement got the best. It got set to the side, and we did not get that fish boated, but yeah, they were hanging the deeper edges and stuff, and it's been fun. It's been an interesting week for sure.
Did you hear from other guys? Was there a lot of action? Were they a little lethargic due to the heat? What were you seeing?
I was seeing a lot of people musky fishing, but I saw one fish boated, you know, in the higher 40-inch range. I did not see a lot of people having any much luck at all. It was a lot of guys are fishing way too deep of water and everything. We found our success, like I said, from 7 to about 10, 11 feet, you know. I talked to a bunch of people, and they said they saw a few fish, but not much fish happening, you know, not much luck happening. And the same report on different muskie lakes around the area. I know, like, over by Motley, one lake had over 80 muskie anglers on it, and only three fish were caught. You know, so the extreme heat took its toll, but if you fish smart and everything, you were lucky. We found milfoil, and that's a whole new story and ballgame there, Kevin.
Really? Oh, I bet that
was incredible.
Well, I know that you had a good day the other day. You sent me a couple of photos of just a monster fish one of your clients hauled in. Tell us that story.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah, it was exciting. We saw one Sunday. Hanging over by the patch of weeds and everything, and hanging around the milfoil. In the same area, we saw a 58-incher last year. So we saw a big one Sunday, and it came in after one of my client's lures, but it never took it. And I was shocked to see this was a truly legitimate 60-inch fish, Kevin. Three of us saw it, and we all agreed this is a 60-inch fish. So yesterday, my new guy, Ryan Krebs, came all the way from Dakota. I get him every year. Wonderful guy and a good friend after all these years. We went to the same area to tie into that, hopefully, 60-inch fish. And about 40 yards away from her, Ryan screamed, "I've got one." And I turned around, and I see this monster of a head come out of the water, shaking its head and his lure in its mouth and everything. got to the motor and everything because the line was stripping off of his reel. He said, "Steve, I'm dang near to the filler. I'm just about out." So I hopped on the trolling motor, got close enough to catch up with it and everything, put the trolling motor back on his rack to sit, get it all the water, and we played catch up with that muskie, Kevin, at least 12 to 15 times. I had to start the big motor and go after it. That big muskie kept diving into the milfoil, and you couldn't see it. And he just kept steady pressure on it. And this battle lasted well over 15 minutes. It was incredible. He didn't horse the fish. I told him that. I said, "Don't horse it," and he knew better. We got it finally netted. It was close to 20 minutes after the first initial hit. Got her netted, and as soon as I got it in the net, I hollered. I says, "Give me a hand." We got her in the boat. Kevin, from back to belly, she was over 16 inches wide. When Ryan grabbed it to hold it up for a horizontal picture, I had to just about help him. She was that heavy. The head was one of the giant, most giant heads I've ever seen. Just a hair all under probably the size of a 5-gallon pail, the bottom of a 5-gallon pail. We got her on the bump board and measured her. She was a hair over 55 inches, and I've handled thousands of muskies from the 30-pound range and about 50 of them that are in the 40-pound class. And I even my own personal best, 48 pounds, was small compared to this one. We knew she was well over 50 inches. So we took a lot of good pictures. We put her back in the water. I held on to her to keep her head upright with my net handle. I took the handle off, and Ryan pumped her back and forth to get her going. I took the handle, and I hit her right between the eyes, not hard, but enough to get her going. He said, "That did something. She tensed up." So he pumped her back and forth and everything, and I let her have it on the head lightly twice more with the handle of my net, and she tensed up, and she took off like a rocket. Mm-hmm. You know, that confirmed our theory, though, you know, that the way she kept going into the milfoil, because I told Ryan, I said, "These muskies love the milfoil." I said, "It's so thick, it's like a carpet." And we also realized, too, that underneath the milfoil, Kevin, it's much cooler water because the sunlight can't make it through. It's darn near black. And the muskies, that's what we did. We kept on throwing our late baits over the milfoil and everything. We had a couple more follows. Nothing else hit. But, yeah, I'm pretty excited. We got the first 50-pounder on Mille Lacs Lake this year. And you know what? It's a story that I might write for Outdoor News, too.
Well, I would if I were you, for sure. Well, Steve, you sent me some pictures. We will get those posted on the Paul Bunyan Country Facebook page today or tomorrow for sure, so people can take a look at those pictures and see how big that fish really was. Because, yeah, it's one of the bigger ones I've seen for sure.
Well, I appreciate that, Kevin. Thank you.
What else are you hearing regarding muskies or other species out on the lake?
Well, you know, been seeing a lot of anglers. They had a tournament up here for walleye tournament, and it was incredible. I've seen a lot of anglers finally catching up and realizing, you know, that there's walleyes in the weeds. I've seen people fishing this tournament all over the different bays, Cove Bay, Lock-On Bay, Vineland Bay had a bunch of anglers. And it was interesting because every angler had these panoptics. It's a Garmin feature where you can actually see real-time fish. It shows the fish. They weren't allowed to use a live bait, you know, or anything like that, just plastics. And I believe the leader had, the last day, he had close to 40 pounds of fish, which was pretty exciting. You know, they can take as many walleye as they wanted. So that was a great tournament. We're starting to catch some nice northern pike on Mille Lacs Lake. It's exciting, especially with the hot water temperatures, you know, 72, 73 degrees. But the pike are starting to go, which is good. Saw the biggest smallmouth of my life. It was on Sunday. One of my gentlemen, we were fishing, the brothers again, we were fishing, and he hollered out, "Steve, take a look over here." And he was figure eighting a 24-25 inch smallmouth bass. It figure eighted that spinnerbait 10 times and went around trying to get that little tail, teaser tail. All my lures got modifications on them, and my spinnerbait's got a teaser tail. And I tell you what, if that fish ever bit Kevin, I'm pretty sure that would be the new state record. So that's pretty much the update, what's going on with the big pond.
Wow. Have you noticed, I mean, I know the water level's got to be low there. Has it affected the way the fish are behaving?
Oh, definitely. You know, you're starting to find these fish go to different areas and that they've never gone before, especially with the water temperatures being, or excuse me, water level being low and water temperatures being so high. You know, that area that we love to fish early in the season, you know, like I said before, the shallow waters, it's become the deeper waters now. And I believe you're going to see these muskies here and all, you know, species of fish moving to deeper water. I'm seeing like Becker Flat over there by Shebuskin Bay, that is right across the casino landing from the casino, of course. We call it the casino landing, excuse me. But Bedker Flat, the walleyes are stacked up like cordwood, 3 feet off the bottom. They're thick all around the flat. So that's deeper water. So they move to the deeper water. Usually it doesn't happen until like the end of June. We're already there. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure we're going to have some interesting fishing, you know, and stuff. And if you play your cards right, you should be able to get on top of them.
Steve, what would you recommend people do this weekend if they hit the water?
Oh, you know, I tell you, it's such a good time right now. I would definitely go walleye fishing. You can still catch them. You can't keep them. While you're walleye fishing, I would have some plastics all set up for smallmouth fishing. It is just peak smallmouth fishing right now. They're having a blast. I know a lot of people, Kevin, using 3 to 4 inch sucker minnows for smallmouth fishing and just killing them. And leeches work really good, too, you know. And fish them in the same area you're fishing walleyes. Right now, over by Indian Point is just one hell of a good bite. It's hot as heck and everything. Go after small pike if you want. Go after some bigger pike. Like I said, they're starting to turn on. And if you're crazy enough to chase the big muskies, well, let me say this, folks. Don't expect it to be a shark attack. If you get a love tap, set the hook as hard as you can.
Okay. Well, Steve, if people want to get one of those, 55-inch muskies and see if you can get them for them, how do they go about getting lined up with a trip this summer?
Well, just check out my website, folks. My telephone number is on it. Check out all one word, predatorguideservice.com, predatorguideservice.com. You'll see some muskies up to the high 40-pound class. Give me a call. Would love to get give me a call. Let me have the opportunity to take you out and show you a good time. And with the good Lord willing, you know, maybe we'll boat a couple 50-pounders, too. We'll see.
Steve, it's always great having you on the show. Thanks for taking the time today.
My pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
This is Fish and Paul Bunyan Country.
Lake of the weekday, lake of the weekday, lake of the weekday, holy cow.
And today we are headed down to the Brainerd Lakes area and checking in with Mark Bacigalupi from the Brainerd Area Fisheries Office. This week's Lake of the Week, Horseshoe Lake. You know, there's a lot of Horseshoe Lakes in your area, as I was trying to find the one that I'd wanted on the map. This one is probably the biggest one. So this one's about 922 acres. The other ones are much smaller than that. So that's the one we're looking for. And for those, Mark, who are not as familiar with the Brainerd area as you and some of our Brainerd listeners are, whereabouts is this Horseshoe Lake that we're talking about?
Yeah, Horseshoe Lake is also known as Sandbar Lake because there's a big sandbar that divides two of the basins and I suppose kind of makes the horseshoe shape. But it's, halfway between Cross Lake to the north and Merrifield to the south on Highway 3. And, a lot of people know where Big Pelican Lake is, east out of Breezy Point. So it's just east of Pelican Lake and Breezy Point as well.
Yeah, and that big sandbar does turn it into two distinct bays, most certainly. It looks to me a west and an east bay. What kind of a lake is it? What are we going to find there?
Well, like a lot of the lakes in the county, it's really sandy. You know, lakeshore residents love the sand, and so you do have that base. There is a little bit of rock to be found. You see some nice bulrush stands out there that is a feature people are keying on at certain times of the year. Each basin has its own little characteristics that are interesting.
Seems to be a pretty good lake to find yourself some largemouth.
Yep, largemouth bass is a kind of a featured species. People go there. Has higher numbers of northern pike, and people have fun chasing flags there in the winter, and could do some trolling as well. There are a few walleyes in the lake as well, and it's really nice clear water, and that's one of the things you see a lot of in the Brainerd area, and something you think about when you're approaching the lake.
Yeah, if you're a walleye angler, that's probably not going to be your number one choice. But if you catch a walleye there, it looks like it's going to be a pretty good size. The average catch for the few walleyes that are in there are really up there.
Yeah, you see that sometimes where a few of those walleyes are persisting and they just get big. And they must be smart or something. And that's why they've been there a while. It's it's also, there's some nice panfish in the lake, crappies and bluegills. One of the interesting things of the lake is there's a bay on the, we're talking about the western basin, there's a bay on the south side that in the early spring, you know, people used to really kind of flock to that area where it's not a spawning area, but it was an early season warm-up area. And that area was actually blocked to fishing for a number of years. Well, we've recently got a rule change, working through the rule change process where that is open and available to pan fishermen again. We figured out that the road right of way does not get you access to the lake, so you do have to fish to that area from a boat, that is allowed, and we just ask people to be polite and considerate of the kind of the tight quarters that you have there.
Okay, yeah, they do look to be pretty tight down there. So that's it's got all the like most lakes that have a lot of bass and northerns. You mentioned the bluegills and the crappies. Good sizes, good populations, healthy.
Yeah, we've been working on horseshoe for a while, trying to rebound some of the sizes there. We had some larger numbers of yellow bullheads for a period of time. We're trying to work through that a little bit. That's coming along, but it does take time. And in the meantime, those bass are getting people through. Those higher numbers of pike can be entertaining, but we like to see a little better size structure from those fish, and that takes some time as well.
Was this lake part of the new panfish initiative or not?
This one is not a new panfish reg, but we do have that northern pike new zone regulation where 22 to 26 inches have to be released. So we're hoping that some of those pike can get into that protected slot and grow past it and have a nicer harvest opportunity on the larger side than when they do get through that.
Does that lake get a lot of traction, a lot of people out there angling?
I think that it was popular for a while, and then it's kind of gone a little bit quieter for a period of time, and some people like it that way, and then if you know the spots there, you can kind of have them to yourself at times, too. So,
is it well-developed, a lot of houses, a lot of resorts, or not so much?
Good number of houses out there, and I'm not aware of a current... we might have to edit that, Kevin.
Okay.
There is a resort on there called Robidoux Resort.
Okay, Robidoux Resort. Okay. And like you said, it doesn't get a ton of pressure on it. Anything on there that concerns you as far as long-term issues?
Yeah, we're working on Horseshoe Lake. We'd like to get those yellow bullhead numbers down. I mean, we've had some past efforts with the Lake Association trying to work through those. We've actually stocked some yellow perch in that lake when they are available. That's a fairly rare thing, trying to get that forage base built up, and that helps the size structure of all the other fish there.
And it looks like the public access is on the south end of the East Bay. If we want to give it a try, how do we get there?
Yeah, if you're coming from Brainerd or Merrifield, you are coming up Highway 3 there, and you'd be looking for a right turn on Mission Park Drive right before the Sportsman's Store. And like you said, it's on the south side of that East Basin.
All right. Anything else we should know about before we go to the lake? And, Mark, anything else we should know about the lake before we head over there?
No, just a nice, peaceful place to fish over there, multi-species fisheries, clear water. Look for those vegetated areas and be respectful of the tight quarters and some of the bays there.
And one of the things that you didn't bring up, so I'm assuming, is there is no AIS in there as of now that we're aware of.
That's correct.
So let's be very, very careful when we go on that lake. We want to save as many of those waters as we can.
That's right.
Mark Bacigalupi, the Brainerd Area Fisheries Supervisor, thanks for joining us today and giving us the details on Horseshoe Lake.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
That's going to do it for today. Of course, the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic is coming up Saturday. We've talked a lot about it this week, but we go a little bit more general tomorrow and get a lot of people ready for fishing this weekend. And we hear from Jason Freed of Leisure Outdoor Adventures, Charlie Worth from Charlie's Gone Fishing Guide Service, and Mandy Urich. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and of course, subscribe to the podcast so you can get all kinds of bonus content and listen whenever you want to. You can do it at Podcast One or on the Pod MN app. I'm Kev Jackson. Thanks for joining us.
FISHWIN Paul Bunyan Country.